Get ready for this piping hot tea. Get ready for tea time and filter with your girl Lovey T. Spilling all this hot tea on these podcast streets. So get ready for this piping hot tea. From tea time and filter with your girl Lovey T.
Hey, Tea Sippers. I hope you guys are doing good today. So we are back with another podcast. And I got my girl, B.L. Sherelle, in the house today with me.
Hey, sis. What's up, y'all?
Man, I'm doing
good to be back.
It's been a long day, but I'm hanging in there. And I know, me and you've been trying to get together for about a week or so now to talk about all this stuff that's going on in the drill industry. I don't know about the drill industry. Just drill music. It's causing a lot of headway. It's been a lot going on just over the past few months in the summer in general. We'll get into that. But what really has sparked this conversation is that the new mayor of New York, he found out recently what drill rap was, because I guess he's not, you know, he's not into drill rap like that, but he has a teenage son who let him know that a lot of these killings in New York have been escalating due to the drill music scene in Brooklyn and especially the Bronx. So the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, he's saying that at this point in time, he wants drill music removed. And so this has been all over the news. And once he said that he wanted to hold the rappers responsible and he wants to get rid of drill music, it caused a lot of rappers like Mano and Fat Joe and all of them to come out the woodwork, and they wanted to meet with the mayor. So I'm going to go ahead and play the clip right now that came out last week of these rappers meeting with the mayor. So we're going to go ahead and listen to it, and then we'll talk about it.
Talk about drill music. There's a lot of talk about the violence that's associated with it.
One-on-one with Brooklyn rapper Mano. Mano just brought some of the biggest names in hip-hop to City Hall, including rapper Favio Foreign.
So the mayor could get a real perspective and a real understanding of what drill rap is.
In recent weeks, two drill rappers have been murdered in Brooklyn. Friday, Mayor Eric Adams expressed his concerns over drill songs and videos posted to social media that reference ongoing gang wars, telling Pix 11 News.
It is alarming.
Nobody was talking to the direct artist that comes from that element.
Mano says he went to City Hall hoping to set the record straight.
Conversation gets deep because, you know, a lot of these kids, they in gangs before they even made a rap record. So is it the music? I don't think it's the music that's getting the average person to do crime.
After his sit down with hip-hop leaders today, the mayor expressed,
violent people who are using drill rapping to post who they killed and then antagonize the people who they are going to kill is what the problem is. And they heard me.
Contrary to recent headlines declaring the mayor wants to shut down or crush drill music, Mayor Adams made clear he's committed to working with the hip-hop community. Jelani Ray is a music industry executive and the founder of Guns for Grants.
The mayor also let it be known that, you know, we have a responsibility as being influencers and the rappers that were there.
Drama, controversy, and concern over rap lyrics certainly isn't new.
30 years ago, they wanted to ban Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre.
Mano hopes the new open dialogue between rappers and the mayor will lead to a new partnership that works to ensure hip-hop lyrics don't lead to real-life violence.
We're going to be rolling out something in the next few days to deal with this issue. It was a great conversation. I was happy to have them there.
All right. So y'all just watched that clip. Y'all heard it. Now, I find this whole situation really interesting, that now that the mayor wants to ban it, all of these rappers are trying to step up and say it's not the music, it's a form of expression and things like that. And granted, we had, you know, gangster rap in the 90s.
We did.
You know what I mean? And we see how that turned out. I felt like it was a lot of excuses coming from Mano and the crew.
Okay. So first, New York, right? It has experienced a tremendous uptick in their murder rate specifically. Mm-hmm. I think they have like a 47% jump between from like around 2013, 2014 to now. They had close to 500 murders last year. So they are in them same numbers with, you know, Philly and Memphis and all those other places. Mm-hmm. But I what I didn't like about what the mayor did is he only talked about the music. The music is just the symptom. Mm-hmm. It's just the symptom of a bigger problem. So for him to only focus on the music as if, and more so just the videos, really. He really had this concentrated focus on the videos. So for him to just only focus on the videos is very, I guess, misleading, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, to think that that is the source of the problem. It's just the newest symptom that we're dealing with. Like, we always dealing with some shit in the Black community, right?
Right.
I also feel like he was just posturing. I don't think, because how do you ban drill music in New York? How does that even happen? Like, what does that even look like? So I feel like a part of it was him also capping. The murder rate is super high. He knew in the office. They're going to put pressure on him. It don't help that he Black. And he also got a law enforcement background. I think he did like 20 years in the police, fraternal order of police in New York. Mm-hmm. So he has all this. So I think that the moderate that he is, he wants to implement certain, you know, racist policies that may have been working. I mean, because stop and frisk was a thing when their murder rate was super low. And then they got rid of stop and frisk, and, you know, some other things have taken place. But I feel like he's just posturing to do whatever, to put whatever type of laws that he wants to put. And he's just purposely blaming that, like, that's the only circumstance. And it's definitely not. It's just a symptom.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. I definitely believe that it's also being used to push a political agenda. I feel like when we have conversations like this, like, you know, he's meeting with these rappers, the conversation to me is always disingenuous on both parts. And this is why, like you said, blaming these kids, these 16, 17, 18 year old kids, that's the symptom. But are they going to address the core issues, like why these kids even turn to gangs in the first place?
Right.
You know, these broken inner city families, the school system's broken, the lenient prosecution of crime now in New York. Okay. And then you have the rappers end where they're like, well, this is just, you know, it's just music. It's just us rapping about a lifestyle. It doesn't mean that folks should go out and do it. But to me, that's also disingenuous because, again, if you can glorify death, because let's keep it real. What is the meaning behind drill music? It comes from Chicago. And if you're from the Midwest, to drill is another term for killing.
Yes. Or that's criminal or criminal activity. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so this, when you break it down, you know, to the infinite details, this is kill music, but we just call it drill. So for me, it's like you guys are glorifying killing and murders and, you know, talking about your dead ops. Imagine if they took that same energy and glorified getting a good job, you know what I'm saying, getting good grades, cleaning up their neighborhood, doing the right thing. So we can't act like music doesn't influence both ways. You know,
see, yeah, absolutely. And I agree. Now, if they were talking about those things, though, they wouldn't be as heavily invested in as they are now. But we're going to get to that later. Right. What I think, though, if, of course, if you take the same money. So the things that create these types of environments is, you know, education, food, housing, right? Mental and physical health, all these things. If they were to actually invest in those things, then maybe we wouldn't have these symptoms. But I am glad that he at least started the conversation, right? Like, even if it leads to nothing on his part, I am glad that he's at least talking about it. That way it can ignite other states to talk about it, right? Because there is something, we do have to figure out what we're going to do about this. We do have to figure out if we're going to just be completely desensitized to kids being murdered and everybody's just making money and enjoying the music and ignoring what's happening. We do have to talk about this on a national scale. So I'm glad that he actually brought it up. You know what I mean? To discuss it. Yeah. And in London, right?
Uh-huh.
In London, they actually have, cause you know, they big in drill over there too.
Oh yeah.
They have this statistic. I don't know how they proved it, but they said 1 in 3 killings in London is drill related, quote unquote. But their style is knife violence.
So they have knives out there.
Right. And they're very, very strict on like their drill music and stuff. That's why they always kind of masked up in the videos and shit. Cause they'll take them videos down real quick over there. You know, they are not as tolerant as we are over here. And even though they are experiencing a crazy upshoot in child murder, I think that theirs is a little more contained because it's not as free reign. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they don't have the access to weapons that we have over here. So I do feel like it's a conversation that's worth having.
Definitely. And because even when you go to the comment sections of some of these videos, you can tell like a lot of these kids are so desensitized. So we can talk about K-Flock. So K-Flock is an up and coming, well, he was an up and coming rapper in from the Bronx. And he's 18 years old, and he was one of the biggest, you know, drill kids right now in the Bronx. He was definitely mm-hmm. building up a big following. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening is back on December 23rd, he was accused of killing Oscar Hernandez. Now, this was a grown man who was waiting for a haircut. And this took place on the morning of December 16th. So Kevin Perez, a.k.a. K-Flock, he ends up walking past the barbershop. And Oscar, you know, just happened to look at him. They happened to make eye contact. And he basically walks into the barbershop to confront him and say, you know, what the F are you looking at? And so nothing is said right there. And then, you know, he walks off. Well, Oscar, the gentleman who ends
up... Wait, who? I'm sorry. Who said, what the fuck are you looking at? Who said
that? They said that K-Flock. He poked his head in, like trying to confront him, like, what the fuck are you looking at?
Okay.
And so they said at the time, Oscar didn't say anything. And so K-Flock walked out. And then for some reason, Oscar got up. And maybe because he felt like, you know, who the hell is this kid talking to? Like, you know, what's up? Like, do you know me? So he walked out the barbershop to kind of confront, you know, K-Flock. Like, you know, what's up? Like, why did you come in there and say that? I don't even know you. And allegedly, K-Flock pulled out a gun and shot him. And it's on, the video was leaked onto the internet.
Yeah.
So you see Oscar coming out. And then all of a sudden, you just see him twirling and falling after he's been shot. And some of the comments were just so, it just made me shake my head. Like one of the top comments was, he came out looking for trouble. He got what he asked for. I don't condone violence, but Oscar should have never walked behind him in the first place trying to see what Flock was on. You know what I'm saying? Flock don't play about that. You can't knock on the devil's door and expect him not to answer. So what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
The damn shooter confronted a stranger who was getting their hair cut.
Right.
You know, so he got up like, well, you know, like, why did you come in here like that? And so we're condoning him killing somebody. If anything, he started the situation that escalated. And so now he's basically locked up. He's in jail, I believe, in Rikers. And so, of course, his status has grown even more. And it's very interesting that all the things that this young boy has been rapping about and being praised for over the past few months, now he's spoken that into existence. Where now he's actually caught a body, but this time he did it on camera without even thinking of the consequences that there's cameras. This was in broad daylight. So it wasn't like late at night or anything like that. There's tons of witnesses, but it's just really sad the fact that his fans are even so brainwashed that they're excusing this.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of them kids are just thinking that everybody knows this kid and everybody knows K-Flock is a gangster. I mean, I feel like he's one of those pretty boys that just got that complex that they got to always overdo it because they're kind of cute.
He's really cute. It's like, that's the killer from the Bronx. He looks
like, that's definitely the vibe he gives me. You know what I mean? And I actually like him. He's a showman. Like, I like how he dance and shit. You know what I mean? I like his style. But I think that those kids, they just think everybody knows, like, you know, what it is with him. So why would you even? But some people don't fucking know these people. Some people are just living their life. Like, they don't know these people exist. They don't know people are that sick. Like, they don't know that people, you know, people blowing their horns out here and getting killed for blowing their horns at people, you know. But some people just don't know that that's happening. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I just feel like it's just a naive take. Their whole world is ran by these rappers. Like, that's what their whole world kind of exists, you know, from is social media. They don't even live life. Like, I was watching the battles the other day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's another subgenre that's very violent. Like, they say all kinds of crazy shit in the battles, but it's always going to stay a subgenre. They're never going to make it mainstream based off of the content. So it's weird how drill has the opposite effect. But I was watching the battles the other night, and they started at the event started at 3, the battle started at 5. Mm-hmm. And my homie was like, man, these fucking battles ain't starting till 5. They got us waiting all this time tonight. And he was just staring at the screen. I'm like, bro, go live your life until 5 o'clock. And then come back. Like, why are you acting like you're stuck looking at your phone? Like, you can't get up and move around and do what you want. And then when the battles come on, you can watch them. Like, it was just a really weird moment. And he thought about it like, you know what? You're right, bitch. Let me get up and let me, like, and live my life for a while until it's time. So people really just be stuck in this, you know, metaverse world. And they think that's the only shit that exists, which is really sad.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And it's like, especially with these young kids, they have no concept. So that whole K-Flock situation, it's really sad because he's only 18 years old and he doesn't understand that you've literally thrown the rest of your life away due to the music and the energy, you know, and things that he put out there. And I don't know if it's
true, but they said that part of the reason he got caught is from what he was wearing. Mm-hmm. I guess he was wearing like a Montclair jacket. He was wearing like some real fly shit, and there's not too many people, you know, that had that.
Who can afford it in the Bronx.
Right. And it's funny because he's one of his lines is like, whatever, like I'll up it in designer or kill it again designer or something like that. Mm-hmm. And all you seen was the lyrics. People took, you know, tweeting the lyrics and people commenting the lyric of him killing niggas in designer. Like, that's all you saw after he quit the case. It's just like, people just really
spoken into existence.
Yeah,
this is the most dapper killer I've seen since, you know, John Gotti. Like we said, he was dripped from head to toe and just pulled out the gun and shot old boy.
Yeah,
I mean, so it's like obviously you have money, but for you to not even think like what you're doing can land you in jail for the rest of your life is just really sad.
Yeah.
Now I want to go ahead and segue into, you know, Ratchet Florida news. Okay. Oh. So we got to talk. We can't.
Ratchet-ass Florida.
Right, we can't talk about drill music without talking about the kids from Ratchet-ass Florida. You know, and they really popped this summer. They took over this summer. Young and Ace,
Fulio,
Fans, Wappa. Mm-hmm. You know, all of them. Spot them, got them. Mm-hmm. Julio, Fulio.
I like him and Young and Ace.
My biggest beef with them is that they're literally messing up classic songs. Like, why did y'all have to do that to Vanessa Carlton?
You ain't like what they did to Vanessa.
Really?
I ain't gonna lie. It was a little bit catchy, but
I was not expecting that. Like, they literally took the song, and I'm like, okay, all right, let's see what's gonna happen. And so, you know, it's all, you know, nice the first 5 seconds, and it's who I smoke. Dude, I was like, what in the world?
Yeah. When it first came out, Vanessa Carlton, her bum ass was swinging on the internet. Oh, this is free expression. Let them do what they want to do. But you just happy that royalty checks is going up. You know what I mean? Like, cut it out. You don't care.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like, yeah. Vanessa Carlton, please. You know, they took her whole beat, her whole, they're not getting paid for the song. It was literally a song to just basically brag about their dead ops. Yeah, and I believe it had up to about 19 names. And people were able to Google the article of each kid that had been killed. It was a mess. And then what that ended up spawning was Julio Fulio's response, who ruined another song that's my favorite, honey, Fantasia, When I See You.
Yeah.
You know, and his whole version is When I See You, like basically when I see him, I'm a smoke you. And he was in the cemetery with Young and Ace's homeboys who had been killed. He had posters and it was just a mess.
Now, I don't know if you know like some of the background on these kids. You probably do.
But, oh, yeah, I do.
So as Young and Ace, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine being with your friends because he was involved in a shooting where he got shot 8 times. His brother got killed and 2 other people he was with got killed. So 3 people dead, 1 person shot 8 times, and he's the only person to survive. So if you can imagine all the trauma that did to this kid, right? And then you're super angry, you're in shock, you're grieving to the utmost degree, and then somebody actually winds up paying you money to spew hatred and spew murder at the people who tried to kill you. Like for a kid, that makes perfect sense. For a young person, that makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't I do that? I'm going to do this shit for free anyway. Y'all destroyed my life. You destroyed my family. You killed my brother. Like, however it go, it's so many bodies in between those two crews that it's just, it's. I imagine it's beyond repair. It's dozens and dozens of people dead behind this beef. Like, that is so severe to the psyche. I just can't imagine what it done did to them kids' mental health. It's so sad.
Yeah, and that is the thing is that a lot of this is pain. Mm-hmm. If that's what it boils down to. Even in the video, you see Queso. And now him and his daddy, honey, they've been charged with murdering Bibby, mm-hmm. who is Julio Fulio's 16-year-old friend. You know, so, and even when I watched the video where Julio Fulio's talking about Bibby and, you know, the death of his best friend, this little boy that he really, you know, try to help and protect, the Bibby story, you can hear the pain and the hurt in his voice. Absolutely. But again, then part of me is like, can I really feel too bad? Because he's a killer too. Like, all y'all got bodies. Nobody's right. innocent in any of this shit. It's right. a bunch of tit for tat. And we're losing a whole generation of young men. And I think, like we said earlier, nobody's getting to the crux of the matter.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Because these songs come from pain. You hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. And so now it's gone from street shit to where I'm going to hurt you on a national level.
Right.
And the reason why that even sparked the whole conversation, not just the who I smoke and, you know, when I see you, it ended up becoming a TikTok trend.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they were all saying, who's Corbin? And all the little white kids were doing them little goofy dances to who's Corbin, because that was a line in Julio Fulio's song. Then we find out Corbin is a real kid.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, like that's
murder. Yeah, mom was on the news talking about it. And it's like all these moms are going through all these traumatic experiences. It's one thing to have your child killed and you're never going to see them again. And now people are dancing to lyrics, you know, clowning their death via TikTok. So this whole situation just goes so deep. It's a mess.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Jay-Z and Meek, I think it was, trying to fight to get lyrics inadmissible in court?
Now, I heard about that, and I feel, I'm going to say this. I feel like if you're foolish enough, okay, to admit your crimes on a song and to really talk about dirt that you did, that's on you.
I feel the same way. I'm like, I understand from the perspective of like C-Murder. Remember how they used his name and basically made him out to be this murderer and all this? And that's kind of what Master P thinks led to him being convicted of that crime, right?
Murder, that didn't help either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about, his name. So I understand stuff like that, right? Like, don't use my image or, you know, just because I make songs about, you know, violence to mean that I'm capable of doing something that's not in the song. But if you're talking about an actual song like YNW Melly, if you're that fucking stupid, then have at it. And I'm confused as to why, Jay-Z, you got so much money, you could be fighting for some other shit, like some elderly people getting out after doing 80 years in prison. You know what I mean? Why are you picking this to be a fight? I feel like because he kind of wants to stay close to the youth in that way, where he never want to come off like the old head, right? I feel like this is his first attempt at trying to be young and cool that I don't like. You know, Jay-Z is like young Hov. You know what I mean? Like, when he called himself young, won't blink twice, even though the nigga like 60. But right. This is the first attempt that I feel like I can see him actually doing it. And I think it's fucking whack. I think that energy should be somewhere else in the criminal justice system. Not for people that's spelling out confessing killings and you trying to, you know, cake for them.
Yeah, I don't agree with that either. I thought that was whack. Like you said, they could put their energy towards elsewhere. Because again, if you're foolish enough to be like, and I don't care if it's you rapping about killing somebody or you rapping about PPP loans. Remember that one dude got popped because he was bragging about all the PPP loans he did in 2020. Yeah. And then the FBI came and knocked on his door like, you know what you're doing is illegal. You're being arrested because now we have proof that you were actually doing this. The song was a bop. I was here for the song. But then we find out he really was doing that. Right. He really scammed like $4 million from the government. Like, how stupid are you? But again, it's almost like people are living in an alternate universe where they feel like whatever they do as far as music and entertainment, it somehow shouldn't affect them in the real world. And that's not how it goes. Whatever you put out there on social media can and will have real world consequences. And that's what these young people need to know. So yeah, I don't agree with Jay-Z fighting for that. There's a lot of better causes.
Absolutely. And
the thing that's very interesting is that, you know, a lot of these rappers love to rap about jail and putting in work. And it went from where you had rappers just simply rapping about it. They really didn't do any real dirt. you know, they weren't the ones out there who were the shooters and the hitters, but they were talking about it. And so we went from that, what we call that era of the studio gangster. Mm-hmm. Remember, Akon, he had the whole song, "'Cause I'm locked up, won't let me." He ain't never been to jail. Mm-hmm. I thought that did 10 years and got out. And you know,
me too. I thought he was too. I thought, because it was like, you know, obviously plenty of people been locked up. Why is the first super locked up anthem, "The nigga never been locked up"? Like, it was just really odd.
It's just like the things that we push is just so crazy, you know, and there's so many rappers like them. We could name Plies, you know, mm-hmm. He literally rapped about his big brother's whole life, but Plies was never no shooter. He was never no goon. He was never no mm-hmm. goblin. You know, all the stuff that he talked about in his music, he never lived any of that. He was a college student at the time. So I just find that very interesting that that's always the image and the things that we push. Now, today, it came out that YFN Lucci, he's basically desperate to get out of jail right now. And, you know, and I've met Lucci and kicked it with him. And he's a real cool dude, but he's accused of some bullshit. So I can't co-sign that. And so all the stuff that Lucci has rapped about and talked about in his songs is very interesting that people rap all this stuff and it sounds good over, you know, an 808 trap beat, you know what I'm saying, or over a drill beat. It sounds good, but then when they find themselves in those same situations that they've been rapping about, then reality really hits them and they get a harsh reality check. So this is what Lucci's saying. Basically, TMZ just broke this about 2 hours ago, and they're saying YFN Lucci is desperate to get out of jail as he awaits trial on his murder case, because he thinks he literally might die behind bars if he stays locked up. According to new legal documents, the rapper claims a fellow inmate at the Fulton County Jail stabbed him last month. He also says he's been told that there's a bounty on his head among the inmates. In the document obtained by TMZ, YFN Lucci claims that he was stabbed from behind while on a video call with someone on the outside. And he says other inmates used a homemade shank to stab him. Since the alleged stabbing back on February 9th, YFN Lucci claims he's been told there's a price on his head and he fears his life is in jeopardy if he remains in custody. As a result, YFN Lucci is asking the judge to grant him bond so he can get the hell up out of jail. He says he would be down with the 24-hour home confinement where he wears a monitoring device if he gets out. Mm-hmm. Now, that's very interesting because the average person who don't have celebrity status or money, you just got to fight in jail. Ain't no let me get out and just be on house arrest. That's not even an option for the average person. So the fact
not
that
for his charges.
Exactly, mm-hmm. for these serious charges. So the fact that he's asking for this lets you know he is going through hell right now. He ain't even in prison. He's simply in the jail.
And you know what's crazy to you? I'm pretty sure he's in PC because in county, mm-hmm. if you have any type of celebrity, they usually put you in protective custody. Mm-hmm. And him saying that this happened in the visiting area kind of confirms that for me also, because that's really the only time you come in contact with like the rest of the population is okay. when you go to visits if you're in PC. If you in, you know, if he was on a block, that shit could have happened anywhere, right? Could have happened right on the unit. It could have happened in his cell. But the fact that the location it happened tells me that he's probably already in PC and it mm-hmm. still happened, which
and he's still going through it and he's in PC, not even living the day-to-day life like the other inmates.
Right. Because they not nobody's going to stab you in the visiting area unless that's the only time they can get to you. Mm. So if there is a bounty, that would explain kind of why that happened, because a person like, fuck it, I'm gonna take my shot. I'm gonna get this check. They're gonna take me to the home, they're gonna recharge me, do all that, but I'm gonna get this check, because they could have got him at a better spot, you know what I mean, in jail. That's the only right. place to sound like they got access to him.
Right. So, I mean, I know we've talked about it on prior podcasts about, like, you know, your situations and you going to jail and you going to prison. And I would like for you to touch on that, because I think a lot of these kids haven't misconstrued that jail is like what they see in music videos. You know, everybody just kicking it on the yard and lifting weights. And, you know, that might be a part of it. Mm-hmm. But you're literally fighting for your life. And if you think you're tough on these streets, there's always somebody tougher, and especially in jail, because you got people there who are doing life and they have nothing to lose. So a lot of these drill rappers who people think are just the toughest, even the dudes in Chicago, like Rondo Number 9, and remember when all those dudes got locked up for the murders, and how many of them have been coming out years later, literally, you know, damn near in tears on the phone with these leaked phone calls, like, ain't nobody putting money on my books, nobody's looking out for me, I just want to go home. Like, they don't give you more years than you don't, you know what I'm saying, than you've been born.
It's a very, very lonely experience. I'm going to tell you, like, so one thing about prison is life got to move on. It hurts people to kind of, like, if you, lifers, for instance, people that's in for life never getting out. Sometimes they families, it hurts them to be in constant contact with them. It's like being reminded of a death all the time, every day, because they'll never be back out there with them. So sometimes families, the only way to cope is almost like forgetting about them. That's the only way to cope and deal with the grief that they have from that family member being displaced and being removed. So it's just such a lonely fucking place. And the same people who you beefing with on the street is more than likely going to be the same people in the prison. So it becomes this cycle where, you know, you on the street dealing with the bullshit, then you get locked up and you still dealing with the bullshit because now it's that people family. Now it's that people, you know, friend and all that other stuff. But I'm going to tell you what's the most scary thing about prison. And it's not the people. Like, yeah, there's threats to get beat up. Yeah, there's threats to get, you can get stabbed. You can get raped. All that can happen. But the scarier part is the institution. The scariest thing that can happen to you in prison is getting sick. Mm. Like, that's literally the scariest thing. Because the healthcare and the way they treat you, like almost that you're subhuman, people be walking around with terminal cancer without being treated and without being diagnosed, no matter how much you scream the medical, no matter how much you go to sick call, no matter how much you beg these people, you know something's wrong with you, you know something wrong with you. They won't run the test. They won't do anything until it's all said and done and until it's too late. It's stuff like that that's way more scary than encountering a fight with somebody. It's the treatment that you get, how you get treated day to day. That shit, some people can't take it, so they go and they get on psych meds. And I've had roommates who we did our whole bid together. We laughed, we talked, we broke bread, all that. And then maybe a year into them taking meds, they don't know my name. They don't know who I am. They done gained 200 and 300 pounds. They just walking around just shaking and just, they done pulled their hair out. They throwing shit out the tray, piss out the slot. All kind, they nothing like the person that they was because they wasn't strong enough to go through it without getting on meds. And the whole thing about prison is they want to subdue. So if you go in there and say, yo, I'm depressed, I need, they going to dope you up. Depakote, lithium, all kinds of medicine that you never even heard of, shit that's blacklisted. And you done lost your mind. And now you never the same. Now when you get out, all your family like, damn, she wasn't like that when she went in there. He wasn't like that when he went in there. Mm-hmm. That's the shit that people don't really know, I feel like. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know that it's literally a threat to your physical and your mental being. It's the top threat. Institutions is the top threat. And I just wish that people could see that when you commit that crime, when you 16, 17, I sent you the article, T. You seen them lifers in there? They old as hell. They've been in there 40 years, 50 years. And they could barely even move now. They in wheelchairs. Younger inmates got to wash them up and all that. They ain't got no family. The one lady, she did 40 years. They was trying to let her out on a compassionate release. And her family told them, oh, we feel like y'all doing a good job taking care of her. Like, let her die in there. Y'all doing a good job. But that's 40 years of separation. She don't know these people.
Right.
So to them, she just another person that murdered somebody a long time ago. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know her. You know what I mean? It was so sad when she, you know, came back to the union and she telling us that's what her family said. You know what I mean? But it's a forgotten place. You're going to be forgotten about a lot of, you know, most people anyway. Some people are, you know, blessed to have support, but the majority of them don't. You know what I mean? It's just very, very lonely and very, very scary. So.
Wow. Yeah. And that is one thing that people don't talk about is the mental health aspect. And I know for me, I didn't even understand, like, it's one thing too, if you've committed a crime and you go to prison and, you know, we hear about all those stories, but then there's also like a segment of the population in there that's technically innocent. Mm-hmm. They didn't do anything like the whole Khalif Browder situation. You know, him going in as a teenager for a fucking backpack that they accuse him of stealing. And, you know, it drove him so crazy. Even once he got out, he just couldn't function. He was from the Bronx as well, ironically enough. And he ended up killing himself. And I remember a lot of people were kind of upset, like, why would he do that? And he's about to get all this money. And, you know, Jay-Z was telling his life story. But it's like you just described, that lonely feeling. And you figure he was a teenager. And for most of his stay there, he was in isolation.
Right.
He was somebody that wasn't out there wilding like that on the street. So now you're in this environment with a bunch of sharks and they're just circling around you. So now you have to do shit that's technically outside of your character just to survive.
Yeah. And a lot of it, like, he was getting beat by the guards. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because he wasn't able to adapt to the inhumane conditions, which a lot of people who are not, you know, just criminals, right? Like, when we go into prison as a criminal, you kind of know what to expect, right? So you're a little bit more capable to handle it because you've probably been there before. This isn't your first rodeo. And even if it is, you always kind of have this, you know, ill intent in your mind. So you kind of think you're deserving of this. But for someone who is not, doesn't have that way of thinking, sometimes they can't cope with the inhumane conditions. They just can't. You know what I'm saying? Like, or, you know, getting sick physically, especially, and this is like women in particular, because they have a different set of issues. You know what I mean? People think women don't go to prison, but they're actually the more growing, they grow, they're going into prison more now than men are for the past 10 years.
Remy Ma was saying that too, that there's more women now that are getting locked up and getting longer sentences. Like, we're back in the day, they probably were more lenient on women, but now you're getting women out here who are getting life in prison, you know, 20, 30 years, you know, they're not having any type of compassion. And I'm not saying that they should or shouldn't, depending on the crime, but you're definitely, that you can't play that I'm a female role.
No, yeah, they don't give a fuck about that. You can't even play that I'm a white female role.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the state prisons are full of white women. Almost, it's almost shocking. Like, it's a shock to the system when you see how many white women be in. You be like, wow, they locked them white bitches up, huh? You be like, damn. I mean, every black person, you know, we all make that eye contact when you first get up there, when you see all these white people. It's like, what is going on? Because literally now it's a numbers game to keep it running. These prisons are in rural areas, right? Mm-hmm. They're not in the cities. And what has happened is generations of families all work there. The mom, the son, the grandmom, everybody done worked at this place. And this is how they, you know, keep their families sustained over the course of time. They can't close these prisons down. They can't start, you know, not locking people up for stupid shit and all that. They have to keep them filled up to sustain these communities. That's what it's about at this point. You know what I mean? So,
and I really believe, sis, that is where this drill music plays a part in that, because from the things I've researched over the years, you have, even here in Minnesota, like, a lot of the prisons and stuff are always out in the boonies, right? And a lot of these prisons, they literally sustain the entire town.
Yep.
That is the entire town's economic, you know, sanctuary is that prison. So they're not going to shut it down. So that's why I feel like this situation with the drill music, like, okay, cool, you know, Mr. Eric Adams, that was a good start. But when are we going to start holding these record labels accountable?
Right.
I feel like they're also in it hand in hand with the prison system, because they're the ones helping to promote the nonsense. They're using these young guys to help promote that music to the rest of the youth. And so now you're listening to this music 24/7 while, you know, on your way to school, after school, you know what I'm saying, doing practice, y'all are listening to all this drill music. And then eventually you yourself get caught up in the situation, and now you're in the prison industrial complex.
Absolutely. This is the new tool. So the last tool was drugs. That was the last shit that they used. Before it was drugs. Well, actually, it was gangs before in the 90s. Then it was drugs prior to that. So, like, they're always going to use something to funnel it in. In gang culture now, that's what it is. I don't think that it's necessarily drill, because drill was allegedly, I mean, I know that it is what you said. Like, when they named it drill, that's because they going to go do some gang shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what a drill is. But the music allegedly is based off of a sound. It's based off of the way the drums and based off of the way the bass is, you know.
It's like a darker beat.
Right.
More so, honest tone.
Right. So you could talk about anything in drill music if you wanted to, right? You could talk about positive shit if you wanted to. Or an example of the evolution of drill would be Fabio Foreign and Kanye and Alicia Keys, The City of Gods. I feel like that is an evolution of drill music. Mm-hmm. You got Alicia singing over it. You know, you got different elements that wasn't there before. But this is the new tool that is, you know, they're going to use to fill them prisons up. And it's crazy because the label... They're not going to see Fulio until we all kind of see him, right? Like, they're not necessarily picking these people up from nowhere. Some of this growing is organic, but the big media push that sustains them for longer, it spreads the message wider, faster, and it becomes more normalized. And we become more sensitized to watching kids get murdered and murder. Like, it can't be mainstream. That's my thing. It has to be a subculture. It has to always be an underground culture. You know, it's not now. I feel like it is kind of mainstream. But this is the part where we have to kind of jump in and try to hold the labels accountable, try to hold certain social media platforms, I won't say, but accountable, right? Like, yo, this is what y'all are funding. You know what I mean? Put their feet to the fire, and hopefully that can change something. Because anytime you incentivize a kid, If a kid see another nigga done blew up like that, mm-hmm. and he living this life too, why wouldn't I try to get my check? Why wouldn't I try to get out of poverty? I'm already in it. I'm already living this life. You know what I'm saying? Right. And what's interesting, when they blow, now all their affiliates and all their family got to pay, because they going to kill somebody a part of you because they just upset that you done made it. So it's like a constant cycle. But I think that if we start holding them accountable, that is a tangible, measurable thing we could do, right? That's something we could see. Money is something we could see. It's tangible. We can attack that.
Right. Because all of this mess, I mean, I've even heard them arguing on Clubhouse. You know, I believe it was like Julio Fulio and somebody else. They were arguing and going back and forth. And, you know, you have all these people. It's almost like sport for the internet now, right? Yeah. And it's almost a game, like who's going to kill who and this and that. But in a way, this is like a really twisted form of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the part that's just so sad and demonic about it, is that, like you said, if this was like some underground shit like battle rap, mm-hmm. where you have to choose to be a part of that culture and listen mm-hmm. to that music, cool. But when I can just watch a drill song right next to like a, you know, a Little Bill video or, you know, Lovely T commentary video, and it's like, there goes a drill song, it's very mainstream. It's very Absolutely. Mainstream now. And the way that they're in there rapping about these dead ops and these dead kids, and it's like, look how many of these people have been murdered because of that. I mean, it's even hit Lil Durk. You know, Lil Durk kept, you know, mentioning people's names in rap songs, and then they ended up killing D-Thing. You know, so it's like, yeah, sometimes that stuff can come back and hit your family. You know, even though they may not have anything to do with it, if they can't touch you, they'll come after your family. And that's the saddest part. It's just like a rotating, never-ending cycle, you know, just nonsense. And that's one thing. And I think that's why Kanye West, even with all his foolishness and his antics, I honestly believe, like, that's why he always holds a special place in, like, my heart and many people's hearts, because he came from that environment. He came from the south side of Chicago, and he could have went that route. Because remember, this was like when he came out, 2003, 2004, everybody was on that, you know, gangster rap shit. You had 50 Cent, I've been shot 9 times, and, you know, many men wish death upon me. You know what I mean? Like,
that was my shit, T. I couldn't get out of bed without playing it.
Right? So it was like all this gangster shit, bravado stuff. And then Kanye comes out, and he's like, no, I'm going to be the opposite. Because every black man in the hood ain't out here dodging bullets and getting shot and, you know, selling drugs. There's guys out here who are more preppy. You know what I'm saying? We're in college. We're trying to figure out life. And I think, you know, he was such a breath of fresh air to the industry. And it was somebody where we could listen to his music and you wouldn't have to turn it down because your kids were in the car. So I think we need that balance again. And but everything is going towards just more than negativity once again.
Absolutely. But the labels are not willing to invest in our positive work. I've talked to you about having a lot of success in the white world. I work primarily for Black people, right? My constituents are Black. And what I do is for Black people. But I've told you about how I'm only able kind of to really get funded by white people. Why is that? Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm a foundation, right? Trying to help other people, but they don't want to invest in positive Black messaging. They would rather invest in shit like this. So how do we even begin to attack that? And what's some of the ideas that the mayor would have to actuate what he wants to do? What? Put like stop it from being played in like institutions like colleges and shit like that. I feel like that's the only thing he could do. I mean, right? He could ban it from like institutions.
And why? But,
yeah, but that's it. What else can you do to police that? I'm not really sure what he could do. Maybe, you know, he could take a couple notes from London. But how do we make them interested in our positive movements? How do we make them want to invest into that? Some of it leads back to the consumer because it's about what we want and about what we consume. They right. didn't find Young Ying Ace just, he didn't have one view when they found him. He was already popping because y'all made him pop because that's what y'all into.
Right.
So like some of it does still fall on the consumer at the end of the day. They just following the money, you know what I mean? And yeah. like people be like, well, people, you know, King Von own his master, stream his music, this, that. Yeah, he might own his masters, but them labels still get a cut. And trust, when they sign these people, they're thinking about that back end. If this person get killed, it's going to be even more lucrative for us.
Like, well, now you know the new thing that they're saying is that a lot of these record labels and distribution companies have insurance money on these artists' heads.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even if you own your masters, you still got to pay 20% of distribution. You still got publishing splits. You know what I mean? So they still coming up. So I just feel like, you know, they go into it with that as well. They don't sign them and then you see the person kind of slowly changing. You like, damn, the label working on them. I see the image changing. No, it seemed like it go times 10 once they get signed. Right. It gets reinforced even further because that's the message that they want out. So I just wonder, it would be beautiful if for once Black people could just come together on one thing and decide like, yo, this is where we stand with this. But we just can't. But then I remember we only like 5-6 generations from slavery. We're not that far away from it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right. It's definitely on the consumers, it's on the fans. That's why I always tell people that, you know, your energy and what you choose to watch and what you choose to support is a big deal. It's a driving force. People don't understand that, you know, that thumbs up, that like, that heart mm-hmm. on these platforms. That is all, that's a commodity mm-hmm. for these influencers and these rappers and things like that. When people see that, they're like, oh, wow, this person has a lot of likes and a lot of followers and things like that. That is commodity for them, for these record labels, for them to be able to get signed. So if you guys don't want the violence, you guys, you know, don't believe in the drill music and think it's, you know, not a good thing that these kids are being killed, then you shouldn't be supporting it. We shouldn't be watching it. And, you know, we're all guilty of this, myself included. I would never act like I didn't watch all of these videos and, you know, get curious about these guys. But why was I curious about them? Because my old ass young and Ace didn't just fall in my lap. The kids sent it to me. You know, I'm just investigating. So, right. You know, he was ready popping by the time he came to me. So imagine if I had a record label. Of right. course you're going to reach out to them because the youth are steadily atting them on Twitter and, mm-hmm. you know, this song is viral. It's on the blogs. So, yeah, it's a whole cycle. It goes way deeper. And the conversation could go on literally for an entire year, you know, right. before we're able to even somewhat resolve it. But I think, like, we have to invest and support people who are doing positive. And even watching the Kanye documentary, we're going to do a green room about it on Monday. It was very interesting how Roc Nation just kept playing him. Like, even after they signed him, they really weren't trying to invest. He had to pay for his own studio time and sneak into MTV to record. And, mm-hmm. and it was just really interesting to watch that. Like, I wonder if he was rapping about selling drugs and, you know, being a pimp and all that stuff, would they have been quick to hurry up and invest him and put his record out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got this guy that I work with. His name is Original, and he was a part of this group called the Lifers Group. Now, my senior advisor was the producer of the Lifers Group. They were a rap group in Broadway prison in 1992 that did an album. They got nominated for a Grammy. They lost to Madonna, but they were all serving life, right? And they created this album and whatever. So the guy Original was the youngest guy in the state prison, and he was the dopest rapper in the group. So he had a lot of buzz when he was about to get out. The guy who had signed like Roxanne Shanté, and like he worked with Naughty by Nature and all of them, because this was in the early 90s, took a liking to Original and wanted to sign him. So he wrote a book, wrote a letter to the parole board. Yo, he's coming to LA with me. He's going to be a star. Let him out. They let Original out. When he gets out, the label head guy who was going to sign him dies from cancer while he's waiting on the plane to go to LA. The guy dies. So then he got a lot of buzz around him. Like, he came home on some Bobby Smurda shit, but early, this is like the early 90s. So he's running around with, you know, Naughty by Nature and all these other people, and the label head dies. But he don't think nothing of it because he's buzzing regionally. He thinks he's still going to pop, even though, of course, he was hurt from the death of his friend, but it ain't stopped nothing. Well, when he gets into the rooms, they was telling him, yo, you dope, but you got to sound like Jay-Z, because he didn't get out until the late 90s. He got out around 97, 98, and they wanted him to sound like Jay-Z. They wanted him to sound like Biggie. They didn't want to hear the message that he was trying to deliver, but he had just did 15 years in prison. So he was evolved. He was elevated. He was on a higher level of consciousness. And because of that, he couldn't get a deal at that time at all. They wanted him to talk that gangster shit, and he wasn't willing to. So absolutely. That's why. They thought Kanye was only good to make beats. They didn't want to hear what he was talking about. They didn't think that it was a lucrative content. They didn't think it was lucrative content at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't think people wanted that. And with Kanye, he had a good way of putting the, like they say, putting the medicine in the food. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, even when you go back and you listen to lyrics like Through the Wire and, you know, It All Falls Down, when he says, you know, we're all self-conscious, I'm just the first to admit it. Yeah. You know, and even if you're in a coupe, you're still a nigga. Like, people weren't saying things like that, you know, back then. So it's very interesting where rap has evolved. Now, if you could just kind of explain some of the stuff that you do, because you have helped to bring studios and things like that into the prisons. Because when you're in prison, like you said, you don't have family. You know, there's a lot of talented people in prison because all you have is time. Yeah. So you have people who are very talented, who can sing and who can rap, but there's no way for them to be able to express themselves. So you guys are bringing the arts into the prison, which is also helping, because then it keeps them out of trouble, you know, keeps them out of the sheriff and all that, their hair, you know, gives them something to do. So if you want to just go ahead and talk about that real quick.
Yeah, so I have a nonprofit record label. It's actually Die Jim Crow Records. So it's the first nonprofit record label in the United States for formerly and currently incarcerated people. So what I do is I just go into prisons, maybe for like a week or so. We take the cameras, all that other good shit, and we create albums. We'll have like auditions at first, and then all the people that's super talented, we work with them, and then they become our band directors, and we'll schedule a time to go in there and like record a whole album or record a whole compilation or just record a bunch of talented people. But I also work with people that's out too. So like I got people that have done, I got this group called the Lifers Groove. They have done a combination of 140 years. It's five of them. They've done 140 years in prison together. That's just fucking crazy. Like it's just so crazy. But my idea is not that these people deserve to get out or whatever. It's just that people just deserve fair treatment in general, no matter what, you're still alive. You're still a person. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're alive and a person, then, and if you're talented, you deserve to make music. Like, you know what I mean? If that's what you want to do. But it's a nonprofit. So it's not focused on necessarily making stars and shit like that. And I tell you, I had so many people, who, you know, go to jail, and once they sit for a couple years, they get to reaching out, want to work, want to do this, want to do that. And it's like, you could have been doing all that shit out here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know what I mean? You could have been doing all that shit out here. But It's just a way for, you know, talented people to share their talent. It's not really like a political thing or nothing like that. We just let them say their piece. And like you said, it's a lot of creativity behind the wall because that's all you have. Literally everything takes ingenuity in prison. Even if you want to eat, you got to like think outside the box.
Child,
even if you want
to. Can you tell me why they are on TikTok burning mattresses and doing hibachi meals in prison? Have you seen the video? I'm like, they about to burn down the prison.
Yeah, we used to make a crock pot. You can make a crock pot out of an extension cord. It's real scientific because you got to throw salt in the tub, make it the conductor, put some metal in there, plug the extension cord up in the water. It's some high science shit.
Say, when you follow them damn prisoners on TikTok, they be coming up with all types of stuff.
You got
they
to.
They be doing TikTok challenges and shit. I'm like, if y'all don't go do your time and get off of TikTok, but it's funny because it's something for them to, you know, at least they're out of trouble. You know, right. They're not fighting and they're doing something. But I'm always blown away by just the you know, the inventiveness of a lot of these guys, because literally if I wouldn't been able to see the background and the hard metal bed and all that stuff, the way that rice was looking, like, sir, can I get a plate? Hey. Like, it looked like some real hibachi.
Hey, see, I could hook you some shit up. Don't get it fucked up. My man on rice? What? That shit was a hit. You hear me? You make a cheesecake. You be making strombolis. You can make strombolis out of like pretzels. You crunch the pretzels like pretzel dough or cracker dough, but that's the dough you use, and then you bake a stromboli. It's some shit. I don't want to eat it no more. But I'm just saying.
I remember my friend was locked up, and it took him like a few, like, oh my god, like damn near a year to like stop making like these prison meals. Like, he'd be taking Doritos and crunching them up and shit and making prison pizzas. I'm like, if you don't call Domino's, we're not locked up. You're free now. But yeah, you know, you've been down for a year, 2, 5 years, however long, you still have that mentality. But I remember it took him a while to like just literally stop cooking like he was in jail.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. My wife every here and there, she'd be like, yo, can you make a chi-chi? I'd be like, all right. I don't be craving it though, but sometimes she be wanting me to make this shit.
I've tasted the prison pizza. It wasn't bad. I was just surprised, like, wow, like it does taste like pizza. Yeah. You know? And yeah, you have to be creative in those spaces. So I think what you're doing for people is definitely a blessing, you know, especially because you've been through that experience, you know how they feel. Like, I can talk about it, but God willing, I would never go to nobody's jail, okay?
Yes.
Speak that into existence.
Yes.
You know, but there are people who have made mistakes. You know, I've had tea sippers come out and reach out to me a few years after they've gotten out of prison. Like, you know, while I was locked up, I would think about your videos because you would say certain things and I knew I was doing wrong, but, you know, I just had to do what I had to do. And then once they got locked up, you know, they reached out to me, you know, after the fact, and I don't judge them, you know, because nobody's perfect. And the only thing different between me and you and the next person is just a decision.
Yep.
That's really what it boils down to, you know, so I never think like it's okay for the people to have their nose in the air where they think they're so much better than this person or that person, or they're beneath me, or just throw them away and lock them up and throw away the key, because you could be leaving a high-end party in the hills of, you know, Beverly Hills somewhere and be drunk out your mind and kill somebody.
Absolutely.
And end up in prison.
Yep.
Again, it's all about decisions. You know, one split second decision can change the rest of your life. And this is why I like to have these podcasts with regular people, you know, who are out here just doing things in the community and, you know, who just see things that are going on, and we can have real conversations, because a lot of times things are glamorized, especially in the music and on social media and in the videos. But nobody talks about those lonely nights when your friends stop calling and, you know, their phone numbers change and they stop writing.
And now having kids and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Life goes on.
And it does. You know, you go in and your child is 4 years old and you've been down 20 years and you're a grandfather of four.
But see, even, and I know we got to go, but even beyond that, right, it's also the damage that it does just to, like, your family. Like, even if you got brothers and sisters, I only did 10 years. Not only, because that's a lot. The separation that it caused between me and my family, right? That it's not, you know, they was around, but that's a long time. And I be feeling bad for not even, you know, not being as close as I feel like I should be with my family. But I can't act like 10 years being removed from them didn't change the necessity of the relationship for me. I can't act like it didn't, right? So it's just like damage done that it just, sometimes it's just really, really hard to get back. So that's even with not that, you know, 20 and 30 years. That's even with 5 years. You know what I'm saying? Like there's distance and things that can be done that you can't make up for. So, you know, just think about your actions, man.
Yeah, that's all you can. Don't live vicariously through these drill rappers or anybody. You know, right. Think twice because, you know, we got wife and Lucci in jail right now crying, wanting to get out. You know, you got K Flock out here talking about he innocent, even though we seen him, you know, dressed dapper, doing the killing, but okay, sir. You know, so it's real. It's definitely real, and it's no joke, and I hope that that's what everybody takes away from this podcast. So on that note, I really thank you for coming through today and just dropping some knowledge and sharing your story. I really
appreciate it. No doubt. Thanks for having me, sis. I appreciate you.
Definitely. Well, Tea Sippers, we'll talk to you guys again. Thank y'all for tuning in. Y'all have a good evening.
Deuces.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Make sure you join us again soon. For all the latest tea, make sure you follow me on my social media pages. Just put in LOVELYTI on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.